All right, are we ready? Everything set in the booth? Levels checked right? Okay, yeah. Talent is ready out here whenever you are, as always. Put it in the book, episode 126 right now. I will try to keep my energy up, even though the Cubs are eliminated from the playoffs. But we'll talk about that later.
Oh.
All right, let's do this thing. Three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. All right, now we're ready. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure, your listening enjoyment, your bountiful binging. How's that for some alliteration, huh? Thank you for joining us this week. And don't forget, of course, not only can you find us on various outlets here, especially WGNplus.com, but on WGNplus.com, you can also find the landing page, which includes all previous podcasts, which now totals 125 on that landing page, which means this is episode 126. So, I don't know. I'm a little bummed. Most of you know, if you listen to me with any regularity, I was born on the northwest side of Chicago, a mere 5 or 6 miles from the hallowed grounds, the friendly confines known as Wrigley Field here in Chicago, and grew up a Cub fan naturally, and obviously, it was natural too. But, yeah, I mean, we were, this is my neighborhood, especially growing up, that was Cubs territory, no doubt about that. And, yeah, I mean, I lived a bus ride away. I lived very close to Addison. Of course, that's where Wrigley Field is located, on Clark and Addison. And even as a young child, probably in 5th or 6th grade, which is, what are you, 11 or 12? We were going to Cub games on our own. Getting on the public transportation bus, the Addison bus. It was, thankfully, it was very simple. It was one bus, and you just went straight down. And in those days, it was relatively safe for a young kid to get on a bus by himself, especially with a Cub hat on. Everybody knew where you were going. And I remember being on the bus, and there actually was a kind of a sense of security there, even as a young kid. It felt, you know, when you had your Cub hat on, and I never went by myself. I was always with a group of kids. But when we got on the bus, it was probably a 20-25 minute bus ride down the street down Addison, even though it was only 5-6 miles away, but with all the stops and the traffic, so it wasn't like it was a 2 minute drive. But I tell you, I'm in retrospect, I look back at it now, and I really do believe that there was a, I did have a sense of security. I was never afraid or feeling insecure. It was almost as if, oh, the kids are on their way to the Cub game, and so if anybody was going to bother them, I almost felt like there was a communal protection of anyone. If anybody did try to come up to us or start anything or anything like that. I think it just felt like there were adults on the bus that were kind of watching out. I really do believe that. I think there was a time when there was that kind of sense of a communal spirit. As I said many times, thanks to technology, we become more of a individualized society. But back then, yeah, you know, I mean, could you imagine that today with the helicopter parents and the driving everywhere, the limousines to everything. I mean, there's no way that I doubt parents let 11 or 12 year olds get on a bus now anywhere, more or less, back and forth to a major ballpark like that. But you know what? We found our way. We got off, and we got off the bus. We got in the park. We didn't do anything crazy. When the game was over, we went right back to the bus stop, looked for the one that said Addison, got on. There was a ton of people there, and it got us home. And even from a standpoint, when we got on the bus, we did not live in the shadows of Wrigley Field. So, you know, it took about a good 10, 15 minutes on the bus, and then suddenly more people would start to get on the bus who are going to Wrigley Field, and you could just tell the baseball people, families, other people. Once again, the dead giveaway was a Cubs hat. I don't know how many people take the bus these days. I would assume there still is, but back then it was really a different time. But, you know, like I said, I've been a Cub fan forever. I still have a lot of my original Cub memorabilia. And, of course, I made something of a name for myself back on WGN when I did an imitation of one of my idols. Good old number 10, Ron Santo. Come on! Gee whiz! Oh, man, Patrick. How could this happen? We certainly do miss Ronnie. I was always number 10 when I was a kid playing baseball. And I played third base initially, and then I went and became a catcher for most of my baseball career, whatever it was. But I played throughout Little League. Played 4 years of high school ball. I was an MVP 1 year, freshman year. I was the captain of the team senior year. I played on the varsity team when I was a sophomore. So I was pretty good. Played on some traveling teams, played on some American Legions teams. Did not play in college. I suppose I could have tried out. I didn't get a scholarship of any kind. But I probably could have tried out. But when I went to college, I was very set on a media and radio career. And so that's what I did. I went into the radio station at my college. And I guess the rest is history. I don't know what kind of history it is. But here we are anyway, speaking to you from my basement. Yeah, nice job, Jim. But anyway, so what I wanted to talk about today is inspired by the Cubs' recent loss in the playoffs to what I felt was at least one substandard team that they should have beaten, which was the Colorado Rockies, which they proved not to be really worthy of it. The Milwaukee Brewers swept them in the best of three series in the first round. And the Cubs won 95 games, and it didn't really matter. It was a wasted season. 95 games, wasted. Doesn't matter if you won 95 games. Ultimately, those 95 games didn't even get you into the playoffs, so who cares? You could have won 10. The Cubs wound up in the same position as the White Sox this year, watching the playoffs at home. The White Sox lost 100 games, and the Cubs won 95, and at the end of the day, it really didn't matter. They both wound up watching the playoffs. So as much as people act, oh, well, they won 95 games, it's the end result. The season is a means to an end, and the end is the playoffs, and the ultimate end is the World Series. So, sorry, guys. I love the Cubs. I've been a Cub fan for as long as I can remember. And I will always, I got a chance to play in Wrigley Field when I was 11 years old as part of a city championship team from Kilbourne Park on the northwest side of Chicago. I played in Wrigley Field. I ran, I slid, I stood behind that home plate, the same place where Babe Ruth once stood. I sat in the Cubs dugout. I jumped in the vines. I've been going to Cub games, as I said, my entire life. So I think my credibility as being a Cub fan is okay, but I'm also a realist, and that's what I wanted to talk about today. not necessarily about the Cubs. So if you're a sports fan, don't turn off. Or if you're not a sports fan, don't turn off, because it's not going to be about sports. It's sports related, but it also I think blends into other things, bigger issues, if you will. Always trying to be relatable to the folks out there. So let me just explain. So I start by, I'm very disappointed. I mean, the Cubs had two games to win one to get into the playoffs. A very unique situation. Almost a guarantee they're going to get in one way or the other. If they don't win the division by beating the Milwaukee Brewers, they should certainly get into the wild card position by beating the Colorado Rockies. Both games at home. What more could you ask for? All you got to win is one out of two to be in the playoffs. So it should have been a done deal. It should have been a no-brainer. And as we know, they lost both, and they looked pitiful. They hardly scored any runs. They looked very weak and very lame. They did not look like a 95-game winning team, okay? I think we can all agree on that. But what we don't agree, apparently, or at least many or some, look, as I said, I am a huge fan of the Cubs. And in general, I am a huge fan of a lot of things. I'm one of those people that I don't do things halfway. I go all or nothing. You know, that's the kind of person that I am in many ways. When I'm a fan of something, when I admire someone or something, like a team or someone, as I've talked many times, obviously, my nickname is Elton Jim. A fan of Elton John, a fan of Bruce Springsteen, or as I said, I'm a fan of many actors and actresses and different people and different things from all segments of society and pop culture. I am all in. If you walk around my house, you could tell what I like and who I like, because I surround myself with it, and I always have. I just don't know. I just don't do a little. I do a lot, and I just don't know a little. I know a lot when I'm really into something or someone. But at the same time, as a diehard fan of many things as I am, I also consider myself objective about the people or the things that I admire. Look, we are all human beings are flawed, and as great as people's talents may be, sometimes personally, they don't measure up, and even sometimes artistically or creatively. As much as I may like something that they do, for the most part, there are times when there's a stumble. That is expected. What I have noticed mostly in sports, but it does apply to fans of other areas, music, acting, and things like that, especially these days, there is a blind faith. And in some ways, I admire the blind faith, but at sometimes the blind faith gets in the way of reality, of the real truth, and in the way of the real success or the hopeful success. You know, I've been a part of the media for as long as I can remember. I began writing for a newspaper, a local newspaper, while I was still in college, like 21. And my point is that I have been kind of schooled and trained, especially as I continued in a media career, and I started out writing for newspapers and magazines as a reporter and then as a columnist and as a feature writer. But I was trained to be objective. Now, today's media is way, there's more people that are being subjective in terms of bringing their own opinions into things. And that's almost encouraged because of our selfie, look at me society. But really, when it comes to journalism, if you're really a journalist and not just somebody who's trying to get a lot of follows or likes, if you're a true journalist, you still adhere to the tenets of journalism. And even though there are such things as journalism school, where you learn these rules and these unwritten and written rules, but most of them are unwritten. That's what the media is. It's a slippery slope sometime. But, you know, there is no certification when to become a member of the media. There is no test that you take. It's not like being an accountant. It's not like being a lawyer. You don't take a bar exam. It's not like being a nurse or a doctor where you have to take a test and be certified by the state. You become a reporter mostly by experience, mostly by instinct. That's how you become a reporter. Reporting and journalism is very much a relationship kind of profession. It's having a nose for news, it's digging, it's being relentless, but it's also having contacts, it's having relationships with people, it's finding information, it's getting people to tell you information. And that really cannot be tested. But there are some rules, written or unwritten, that you should adhere to. And in today's media, I think a lot of those lines are blurred. There used to be, and some of the established media still adhere to it, you know, like your newspapers, like your New York Times, your Chicago Tribunes, or your Washington Post. But in the internet world, there are very few, and even in television, they are so worried about getting scooped that they will run with a story that has not been sufficiently vetted or sufficiently proven by at least one or two sources. And that's usually the rule, just so you know. The rule in any kind of reporting is that you at least get two verifications on a fact or on a story before you, at least it used to be, before you put it out to the public. And now even established places like the New York Times are printing things on deep background, meaning that we will not tell you the anonymous source, or that we will not, you know, sometimes it's really not been, corroborated by, more than one source. And that is sloppy journalism, and that gets us into a lot of the problems that we've gotten into today. But sadly, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. And journalism has suffered because of the laxness of the way that the internet has impacted news gathering, and the need for speed, the need to be the first one out there before anything has been fixed. So we've seen, been checked, fact checked. So we have seen a lot of unsubstantiated stories make it into the public domain when they really shouldn't have been. But my point is, that's the way a reporter is supposed to be, as much as you can be. Yes, every reporter is biased to some extent, but it is your goal to try as hard as you can when you are reporting a story to be as objective as you can. You know, you go out to cover a fire. I used to work for the Chicago City News Bureau when I first started out. It was a great training ground. It's no longer around, but it was a place where most reporters here in the Chicago area, learn their trade. It was a rough and tumble, get out there, find a story, get out in the streets, find the facts, call back in. It was a great training ground. And as I said, that's where I learned a lot of my reporting skills and quote-unquote rules of how to do it correctly. That doesn't happen anymore, sadly. But my point is, that's the way you're supposed to be. And when I talk about being a fan, now, Grant, in the definition of being a fan, you are obviously being biased. You are totally succumbing to your subjective, your opinion, your emotional side, as opposed to your objective, which is just facts. Right? That's the idea of a fan. Fanatic, right? That's where fan comes from. A fanatic. So I understand that. And in many ways, certainly, to someone who is not a fan of something, I'm sure I look like a fanatic. I always try to think of myself as the most sane, or at least somewhat sane, of the insane, as a joke. Because if you're a fanatic, you're obviously going to the next level. But I think that I am something of a unique fan in that I do not have blind faith. I do not think that everything that my idols or the people that I admire most do is great or perfect or that they are infallible. I think that takes away from their greatness, because what makes especially someone that you admire great is that you realize that while they are human, they do have this special talent. They have risen and done something extraordinary. And that is worth your admiration, because they have the same tools at the very baseline that you do, and yet they were able to achieve something else. Maybe they were given a kernel of talent, but they developed it, and they continued to push it and exercise it and achieved great heights. But they started out the same way that you did. So I think whether it's a baseball team, whether it's a performer, whether it's a politician, whether it's a scientist, whatever, whoever, and whatever you feel great admiration for, I think the more you recognize their humanness, the more worthy of your admiration they are. If you put them on a pedestal, no one can live up there. And we have seen that. No human is worthy of being put on a pedestal. We all are flawed. And so even within my fandom, even within my exuberance and my obsession, or whatever you want to call it, I still use, and maybe it's just a part of my personality because I've been sort of schooled in this objectivity as well that has seeped into the way I view the world and view things because of my training at an early age as a reporter to be objective, to be a little cynical, to question. That's what makes a good reporter. You have to be a little cynical. You have to be a little questioning, because you really can't take things at face value, because there's always some room to dig and find that story. If you took it at face value, you'd believe everything that a politician said, and we'd never have water. We would never have unveiled Watergate, for instance, if Woodward and Bernstein weren't a little cynical and a little questioning and a little suspicious. That is part of being a reporter. It does sometimes make it hard to be friends with people who aren't in that world, because they're looking at things from a different way. And I understand a lot of people look at things with a lot of hope and a lot of optimism, and reporters, to a great extent, are kind of a cynical bunch. So I don't deny that I'm in that group. I've been in it for a majority of my life, so I understand that. But I also think that it's important not to just have blind faith or blind hope in anything, because we've seen how dangerous that can be. We've seen people put their blind faith in leaders and have them disappoint them or savage them. Nazi Germany, Jim Jones, the preacher. These people died. Charles Manson. These were charismatic people that people willingly gave their support to, when blind faith, and those people fed on that blind faith and led those followers in a bad way. So I think blind faith in anything can be dangerous. It clouds your vision of reality. And I am, at the end of the day, I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. I certainly have optimism. I certainly have hope. But I also do look at things from a realistic standpoint. And nobody was more happy, for instance, when the Cubs won the World Series. It was fantastic. It was something that I waited my whole lifetime for and never thought I'd see the way it was going. So I was happy with it, no doubt about it. But if you remember, there was a lot of question marks along that way. And the Cubs were somewhat lucky for the first time. The irony is, for all the bad luck the Cubs have had in their history, to win that World Series in 2016, it was almost a miracle. It was almost ridiculous luck, because they did not have the momentum. If you remember, there was a rain delay, which really helped quash the Cleveland Indians' momentum, and the Cubs wound up winning in extra innings. But what I'm trying to get at is, I look at things with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of bias and fandom and obsession and enthusiasm and energy. No question, when something or someone does something great, I go overboard. But when they don't, I do think it's the correct thing to point it out. And the goal is so that we can get better. It's okay to criticize your idols. It's okay to criticize your team. You're not being disloyal. I believe you're being more loyal, because you want them to be good. They mean so much to you that you are willing to point out the mistakes and the weaknesses so that they can be worked on and improved on, so that they can be better and good. And that, as I said, doesn't just apply to sports teams. It can apply to anyone. It can apply to your friends. It can apply to yourself. The only way that you truly solve a problem is by identifying the problem and its root causes. It's true root causes. That's the only way that you solve any problem. Talk to any doctor. They first have to diagnose you, find out what you have, confirm it, and then they can begin a treatment and hopefully a cure. It's not always fun. It's not always pleasurable to be able to have to diagnose that, to find that problem. If someone has a tumor, the doctor must deliver the harsh, bad news that a patient has cancer and that you've got a tumor. But the other side of that news is, but now here's what we're going to do to fix it. And if we fix it, here's the good things that can happen. The doctor just doesn't say, he just doesn't see that you've got a tumor, but says, well, I don't know. Why don't you just, we could just keep our fingers crossed and everything will be fine. No, that's not the way it works. That's why we have so many problems in our society. We don't want to look at the real roots and the real symptoms of some of our biggest problems that we've been battling for decades, for hundreds of years. Because sometimes the hard truth would be very difficult. And as a society, we just don't want to face it. And that's why our solutions are never truly effective. But when one of my favorite teams is not playing well, or if, a performer of mine puts out a bad album or something like that, I will say it. And I don't think I'm being disloyal. I think I'm being honest in the hopes that the next time out, the same mistakes won't be made. Let's acknowledge the mistakes. Let's change them. And let's get a good result moving forward. What's wrong with that? How is that not being a fan? How is that being disloyal? How is that being negative? I'm offering some negative input, but the end goal is positive. Eliminate the negative. Here's the negative. Here's the problem. Here's the tumor. How do we treat it? We just don't hold a blind eye to it. And I'm bringing all this up because I do see in today's society, if you mention anything negative, people just look at you like you are a negative, a Debbie Downer. You have to be. Everybody needs positive reinforcement today. We are in an Oprah-ized society where we need constant affirmation of our self-esteem and our worth. You can't say anything bad about anyone, even in a positive, constructive way. You cannot give any hint of negativity, or you are disloyal, you are not optimistic, and you are, you know, not with the team. And I say, no. That's why we're in such a crazy state we are right now. Nobody's looking at reality. And I bring this up because I just, over the last several years, coming back to sports and coming back to the Cubs, after even in the World Series that they won, I felt that Joe Maddon, the Cubs manager, made some very questionable decisions that did not put the team in the best position to win. And I actually believe that in 2016, the Cubs won that World Series in spite of their manager, which is not the way you're supposed to do it. Now, he was the manager. They won the World Series. And for many fans, that's all that matters. So all of his sins are absolved, past and future. He won a World Series for us after 100 years. He can do no wrong. I don't think that's going to help the Cubs moving forward. I don't think that helps anybody. You're only, sadly, in this world, you're only as good as your last performance. The Cubs have not gone to the World Series in the last 2 years. They've certainly had the talent to do so. Joe Maddon has made some really bad managerial decisions in the last 2 years in the playoffs. Yes, I know he's won a lot of games during the season. But as I said, the season doesn't matter. It's a means to an end. The goal is to get in the playoffs, and the goal in the playoffs is to get to the World Series. And when the Cubs have gotten on the big stage playing against really good teams, Joe Maddon has not put the Cubs in the best position to win. They were hitting very poorly in the last half of the season. They were not trying to manufacture runs. He was still hoping and putting all his hopes on big innings and hurt players that were not coming through, like Chris Bryant. He was letting guys swing for the fences when they should have been bunting and moving runners over and manufacturing runs when clearly they weren't hitting in the clutch. And I pointed this out on my Facebook page. And I called Joe Maddon's managing atrocious, which I think it was, especially in the Rockies. Cubs could have won that game. Cubs should have been in the playoffs. If Joe Maddon would not have waited for the big inning, would not have waited for Chris Bryant, who is clearly still hurt and hasn't hit anything, to keep just striking out and swinging lamely. It was disgusting. The Cubs had a couple of chances to score some runs, as badly as they were hitting. Manufacture runs, bunting runs over, getting lucky, putting the right people in. He made bad decisions. Bags were jammed. He puts in one of the biggest automatic outs on the team, Justin Hayward. Terrible. Jason Hayward? I don't even know what his name is. I don't care. He's making $18 million a year, and he's the biggest Cub killer in the league. Sadly, the biggest rally killer for the Cubs is not even on another team. It's on their team. It's Hayward's bat. So I put this out on my Facebook page. I said, you know, once again, Joe Maddon in the playoffs 2 years in a row, and even in the World Series, didn't make very good decisions. Did not put the Cubs in a good position to win. And my gosh, did I hear it from Cub fans? How could you be so negative? You're not a fan. He won us all. He won us a World Series. He won 95 games. How could you say this? You're not a Cub fan. A real fan doesn't say that about his team. He roots for them. And as I said, my response is no. A real fan roots for them as I do, but wants them to be good. And when he sees a weakness, He points it out so it can be corrected. And so for a couple of days, I was taking a hit on Facebook, and I didn't mind because that's why I put it out there. You hope that people might see your line of thinking, but right in the aftermath of two very tough losses, I said people said I was negative and I wasn't a Cub fan. And once again, I don't mind the criticism. When you put yourself out in the public, that's what you have to be ready for. But I was happy to be vindicated two or three days later, because Joe Madden's boss, Theo Epstein, who is successful. You know why he's successful? Because he's a realist. I'm sure he's the biggest Cub fan there is. He's doing whatever he can to make the Cubs win, but he also, it's his job to identify the real problems and fix them by getting players, getting rid of some players and getting new players or whatever to address a problem. That's why he's successful. That's why the team has been successful, because that's the way he has had to go about his job. And it's okay for a fan to be critical. You don't have to have blind faith. In his press conference a couple days afterwards, Theo Epstein hinted, didn't come out and say it, but certainly I think the message was received, I hope it was, that Joe Madden really might be on the hot seat here. Yes, he won the World Series in 2016. But now we'll be going into 2019. He hasn't won one since. And maybe he doesn't have what it takes to win another one if he keeps making these kind of mistakes. And so Joe Madden's status right now is not forever golden. In some Cub fans' minds, they still cling to that. Look at Mike Ditka. Mike Ditka won one Super Bowl in Chicago. One! He is still a god. Chuck Knoll won five or six in Pittsburgh, and I don't even think there's a statue to him anywhere. Maybe there is now, but my point is, do you even know who Chuck Knoll is? He won five Super Bowls. Mike Ditka won one, and that was enough because Bear fans hadn't won since 1963. It was 22 years, and when Ditka won, all sins were absolved for Ditka for the rest of his life. And that's fine, but you know what? The team hasn't won since then. And that's what our goal is as a fan of the team. You want them to be successful. So I have always respected Theo Epstein, and I have even more respect for him, because in the aftermath of this, it would have been very easy for him to say, hey, next year we're going to be great. We had some injuries, blah, blah, blah. He did not do that. We've made some problems. We had some problems. There's no excuse for it. We're going to find those things. And yeah, Joe Madden's philosophy and his managing is not without question now. And that's the way it should be. Theo Epstein is a big Cub fan, folks. You can be a fan of something, but not have to have blind faith. Not just hope against hope. It took 100 years. That's what that did for you. It took over 100 years with that kind of mindset. There were Cub fans who lived a whole lifetime and never saw them go to the World Series because of that blind hope and that blind faith, as opposed to being realistic, looking at the weaknesses and filling them, not just hoping, not just wearing a hat, not just wearing a jersey. It's okay to be critical of, what is that phrase, you always hurt the one you love? You know what that means? You're being a little honest with them. That's how, to me, you really show you care. If you have the guts to say something to somebody that may hurt them, but is ultimately there to help them to be better. So I will continue to take my hits. I don't care. I'm a Cub fan. I'll put my Cub fan and my Cub fandom up against anyone's. No, I don't have a room that's dedicated to the Cubs. I don't I don't go to 150 games a year, but I'm a Cub fan, and I'll put my Cub fandom against anybody's, regardless of whether I wear a Cub shirt every day or not, or that I just think that they're the greatest, and wait till next year. There's 108 wait till next year's, until somebody who came in with an objective eye put that team back on course. And I'm just saying, forget about sports and anything else. It's okay. It's okay to be a devil's advocate, I think. You're trying to look at the other side. You're still optimistic. You're still a part of the team. You're even probably, I think, a more valuable part of the team because you are looking at the possible mistakes here or weaknesses, and you want to shore those up so that there won't be any weaknesses, so that the path to success will be quick, will be smooth. Nothing is without pitfalls. So, I don't know. I'm content to do that. I will always do that. I will always point out. I will always go overboard when a person or a team or whatever I admire is successful and they're doing something that I think is right. I will go overboard to the point of obsession, to the point of fanaticism. But when they fail, or when I see a weakness, I will also, with that same zest and that same enthusiasm, point that out so that it'll change, so that we can get better again, so that we don't make the same mistake again. As I said earlier, we're all human. We all make mistakes. The goal is to not repeat them, is to learn from history, to learn from our mistakes. And the only way to do that is to be honest with ourselves, honest with our teams, honest with our idols, honest with ourselves. And then fix those weaknesses. So call me a Debbie Downer, call me negative, whatever it is, but all I know is that's the way you get results. Ultimately, to use the Cubs, I don't want the 2016 Cubs to become the 1985 Bears. They won one Super Bowl, should have won a lot more, haven't won one since. I'd like to see another World Series for the Cubs in the next year or so. I don't want to wait 30 years for another one and more. Don't forget, the Bears Super Bowl is 30 years and counting. You know, it's 33 years now and counting. I don't want that to happen to the Cubs. Theo Epstein's goal is to be a regularly competitive team. This year was a failure if you're a Cub fan. You got to admit that. Don't give me yeah buts. No yeah buts. You won 95 games, and you didn't make the playoffs. You made 95 games, and it took 96 to get in. Failure. You could have won 20 games. Same result. What do you do to make sure next year isn't that thing? Doesn't repeat itself. So, in today's world, if you, once again, you're called a hater. We even have a word for it. You're a hater. If you are not just constantly positive about anything, about everything, I don't think that works, folks. I'm as positive as can be about things that I enjoy. But at the same time, I always want them to be as good or as great as they have been and as they could be. And so if there is a weakness, I'll point it out. And I even look at myself that way. So don't be afraid to say something. You might have to take some hits, but you'll know in your heart that when you are actually looking for and identifying some weaknesses, it's not for the sake of being negative. Your negativity, if you would call it that, the goal of that is to be positive, is to be optimistic, is to give whatever you're talking about the best chance to succeed in the long run. So in other words, if you see a problem, don't be afraid to point it out. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. And now we take a stroll into the Pop Culture Club with regular contributor Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
Hey. So what I wanted to talk about today is actually an extension of what I talked about in the first part of the podcast. A lot of times we'll do a different topic, but I thought it might be worth getting your take on this. What I was talking about was this past week or so, almost 2 weeks now when this will post, in Cub world, the Cubs got beat by the by both the Milwaukee Brewers and the Colorado Rockies, and did not get into the playoffs this year, despite winning 95 games and tying for first place and tying for the best record in baseball. They did not get in because they could not win just one out of two games at their home field. And so I was very critical of their manager, and have been for a while, and posted a few things on Facebook about how I thought that he did not do a good job and did not prepare the team and did not put them in the best place to win one of these two games, which should have been a no-brainer, at least one of them. So I was not completely surprised, but I guess validated, because I did this last year and 2 years ago and got the same response, because Cub fans are just so diehard, and now that they're winning, if you say anything negative about anything, you are a hater and disloyal, and how dare you,
Right.
And especially now that they've won the World Series a couple years ago, this manager, Joe Maddon, all of his sins, past or future, have been absolved because he won the World Series.
Right.
It's almost like Mike Ditka, he won the Super Bowl for the Bears, so that's it. One time, regardless, forever, he is the coach,
Right.
That's the way Chicago fans are. And I was, and so I got some of these responses off Facebook that were like, oh, my gosh, you're so negative. Is this just a bit? Are you just doing this to stir things up? And you're not a fan. And why weren't you should just be a Brewers fan. And oh, you're crazy. And this is, this guy did blah, 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 blah. And it's like you can't, clearly with some Cub fans, it's just blind faith. There could be no realism. There could be no, if you're a Cub fan, you love them regardless, and if they lose, then they're going to win next year.
Right.
And there's no road between. And so I was liking this to, in terms of just liking, other things in, my life, whether it's, sports teams or, performers or whatever. I am a huge fan, and some can argue an obsessed fan, it's fine with me. But at the same time, I do not have blind faith. I see, whether it's Elton John or Bruce Springsteen or whoever, I still view them in a very human way.
Oh, I was just listening to last week's episode, and it's funny you should say that, because there were a couple of things you said about Elton that made me think,
yeah,
I don't think Elton would want to hear you say that.
Yeah, but
you're he's really showing his age.
Well, but my point is,
I agree with you. I think you have the right amount of perspective for even for the things that you are most passionate about.
And my view on this is that, say for the Cubs, my goal is I view myself as being a fan by pointing out the weakness, so that the weakness can be recognized and treated and solved so that they could be good.
Yeah, right.
Now,
yeah.
Some fans, you can't say anything wrong. And I, like I said, even on some, you know, with Elton, there's some Elton, these diehard Elton fans too, where, you know, God forbid you say that this song is bad. You
right.
Know, oh my God, you're not a fan. How could you, you know? And so I was just, you know, wondering. So I, like I said, I got this feedback. And then I got vindicated, actually.
Are you getting death threats yet?
Well, no. But actually, it was funny because I got vindicated then 2 days later. I put this up the day after they lost. And 2 days later, the Cubs general man, or, you know, the Cubs president, Theo Epstein, who put this whole team together, basically has begun, in a very subtle way, he questioned Joe Madden.
Right.
And basically said, you know, we've got a few little problems here that we need, you know, that maybe, and he didn't say his name, but clearly the stuff that he brought up are things that are under the manager's responsibility. And okay. Joe so Madden,
reading between the lines.
Yeah. And yeah. Joe Madden's contract is up after next season. And he did not announce an extension to take this completely off the board. You know, like, hey, okay. You know what? You think Joe Madden did a bad job? I just gave him a 5-year extension. So
right. Stop
talking about Joe Madden being fired. He's our coach forever. The fact that they did not announce an extension and the fact that he did kind of bring this up, you know, validated what I was saying. It's like, look, and so I'm, in my view, I'm like, hey, here's a guy, the president of the team, who also looks at this as a way, how do we get better? This is, we can't just keep our fingers crossed and hope, because that was going on for 108 years.
Okay, but I don't know anything about baseball or the Cubs right
now. No, but I'm just talking about.
It seems like you just said they had a good season and they won the World Series last season. So, what, I mean.
Well, they won it 2 years ago.
Oh, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay, now it's 2 years. So now it's two years in a row that they haven't been back.
That 2 years has gone by really fast, because I feel like that was just last year.
But okay. My point is, so now it's been 2 years. And yes, they had a successful season. They won 95 games. They had the best record, tied for the best record in the league. But you know what? It doesn't matter.
But
they could have won.
Just because they didn't make it to the playoffs?
Well, that's the whole idea. That's the season is a means to an end. The goal is, who cares? What did their season?
But I'm just saying, is that, so now this guy's the coach, right?
Yeah.
Now he should be fired because they had a great season.
Well, who cares? They're not in the World Series. They're not going to the World Series.
Wow,
that's
cutthroat.
Well, that's the new standard. That's why.
I guess so. But
I mean, that's the way I look at it. But I guess my bigger point is, you know, forget about sports. You know,
right.
To extend it to other things, when you, because you're a big fan of either people or whatever.
Yeah.
What is your view? You know, you take your favorite actor or favorite actress or, you know, whatever. You know, like I said, I'll, when Elton.
Well, let's say Johnny Depp. This is a perfect example because I love him, but he's on a little bit of a downward spiral right now.
You think so?
Do I?
Wow. Okay, right now you just showed your true stripes. He's on a little of a downward spiral.
Right.
Holy cow. He's like the Madman cartoon.
I think you see where I'm going with this.
At the beginning of the show, when that little cartoon figure is falling down the building. Wow. Well, you know, it's a little downward spiral. I have never seen a little downward spiral.
He's just going through some stuff. That's all.
No, but so take him for example then. So that's the way you would view him, or would you be critical of him?
I would say that I definitely can sympathize with people who are so loyal to something that they will, you know, that they'll still try to put like a positive spin on things. That said, I'm not going to be like jumping on, you know, I'm not going to be trolling anyone's like social media trying to make my point to defend him. So, you know, there's another level, like, because your Facebook post that got you thinking about this, right? And so that's like that takes it to a whole other level, because when people start getting into it on Facebook and like posting their views, it's just like, you can't, it's like this unstoppable force. People can't help themselves, and they definitely don't back down. They do not back down.
Yeah.
And they will go rounds and rounds with complete strangers. Think
about definitely. It. Most of these people, I mean, you know, on Facebook, I have, you know, almost 2,000 friends, but I probably don't know 1,500 of them.
Right, right. But I mean, they'll then, you know, some people who are following you on Facebook who, you know, they'll jump in to defend maybe your point of view, and they'll be that now they're engaged with this debate with someone on the other side of town who they do not know.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me. I mean, I wouldn't go that far. You know.
Well, I just think, and like even in the case of an artist, like I said, I mean, the part that you were referencing when I was talking about Elton's tour, and I said, you know, when he gets up after he, you know, after he performs a song, when he stands up to bow and he walks across the stage, he looks every bit of his 71 years old. However,
you're like, oh, he's got arthritis,
right?
He's got
neck problems. But in my view, that was a compliment, because I also said at the end of that sentence, but when he sits down at the piano, he's like he's 22 years old again. And that's amazing. And so, you know, but my point is, I think that even in the case of a performer, whether it's a performer making a movie, whether it's a performer who's you know, a recording artist, if they put out a great album or they do a great concert, or even within a concert, they do a moment that is unbelievable or something. You know, not only will I, you know, praise that because of my deep admiration, affection, fanaticism, whatever you want to call it, I will certainly go overboard in praising that. However, when they do something wrong, I will point that out, not because just to be negative, but to say, okay, wait a minute, that wasn't good, and you shouldn't do that again, or here's something that hopefully won't happen again. Let's not repeat the mistake. And I think that, to your point, which I appreciate, where you said, okay, you've got a healthy balance, that's the difference between the scary fan who goes and shoots John Lennon.
Well,
no, but I'm just saying, or the one that
another level.
Well, yeah, but my point is, to me, if you are all in, if you are a diehard fan of anything, if you are and you go with blind faith, I think that's dangerous, because you're dehumanizing the person, and I think that person deserves your admiration, because the more human they are in your mind, then the more talent or the more, you know, amazing they perform, whatever they do, is a credit to them and worth admiration. That, look, we're all on the same plane, and yet, wow, look at that person and look what they're able to do, and that's why I admire them.
Right.
But if I put them on a pedestal that makes them almost, you know, supernatural...
Yeah, they can do no wrong.
Then they can do no wrong, and they, to me, then they're not as special, really.
Right.
Because they're in a different realm, and we all know they're not. And we all know that they are as human as anyone else, especially in their personal lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of them really
so,
kind of struggle in their,
you know,
personal
lives. So
I follow you.
But I mean, I guess my bigger question is, I mean, in today's world, can you be negative without being viewed? Can you say anything that's not positive without being viewed as a Debbie Downer
or as a
negative person or disloyal? Can we not criticize anything anymore?
Well, I don't even think it's criticism. The bottom line is you can't really say anything. You can't really take a stand on anything on social media without the trolls coming out. And that is just the fact of the matter.
So then what is it? So then what is social?
It's a function of how social media allows people to just blurt out and express their views, you know, and just share it with a whole bunch of people while they're doing it. It's just the nature of the game. So, I mean.
So then what is it? If I can't voice.
I mean,
any criticism, then what is it? Is it just a playland to to say how cool I am and how great life is and put up some inspirational Oprah phrases and some pictures of butterflies and ponies and dancing cats? I mean, is that all it is then?
Well, see, this is why I don't really deal in social media much anymore, because I'm like, I can't, you know, like I when I first went on Facebook, it was because I was living far away and I was like, oh, I can stay connected with my friends no matter where they live so much more easily. You know, you don't have to send a separate email to everyone if you just want to share like something that you're doing or whatever. And I also really liked seeing what my friends were up to, you know, and they were all sort of, when I first joined Facebook, I think I had just gotten married. And so I didn't have kids yet, but a lot of my friends did. And I could see pictures of their kids and they were getting bigger or they were having babies. And I could kind of stay on top of that stuff, even though I was like thousands of miles away. And it's just since then, because we're talking like 2008 here. So, you know, 10 years ago. It is just morphed into something totally like, I mean, think about Facebook now as opposed to what I just described, which was a nice place to connect with your friends. Now, for you, I think it's good. Like, you need to have a presence there because, you know, you're a radio personality. You've got the podcast. Like, you need to have a presence for sure. That's just part of
right. But my know, point
promoting,
is, can
promoting
you...
the show, promoting your WGN appearances, stuff like that. But it is this is the world we live in. I mean, and everyone likes to have opinions. They like to share their opinions, and now they really love to share it so that, like, you know, everyone and anyone can hear and see what they think. But you have to decide. I mean, so what is your response? Like, do you reply?
Well,
to
so
some that, of
well,
the
it depends. So then, you know, I make the initial and some of it certainly is there to inspire some feedback and some, you know, I mean, anytime you have an opinion, you're opening yourself up. And anytime you put yourself into the public arena, it's a whole like to your point.
Yeah, you're starting a dialogue.
Yeah. And it's a totally different thing. Long before social media, I've always been putting my opinions out into the public square from when I was 21 years old, writing about music and, you know, reviewing albums or reviewing concerts. It was my opinion.
Right.
So I understand that. And that's part of the engaging of the audience. And you have to over time, I certainly. You know, have developed a hard skin initially. You know, you sort of, you know, go, whoa, you know, you always think you're right, but then you realize, okay, there's people that are going to disagree with you, and that's fine. But I think the difference here is, and like what you're saying is, not only do people disagree with you, but they immediately label you as a blank. You are a hater. You are disloyal. You are not a Cub fan. And I'm like, look, I've been a Cub fan, and I consider myself just as much a fan. I might not wear jerseys all the time, and I might not fly the flag, the W flag from my house.
Right.
But I've been a fan since I was a little kid, and I'll put my fandom for the Cubs against anyone else's. I might not wear it on my sleeve like some people do, and I might not be live or die by them. But my point is, I think by pointing out their... as I said before, their weaknesses, I'm being just as much of a fan and perhaps even a better fan because I want them to be good.
You're trying to help them.
To help them by saying, look, here's a problem. Instead of just, you know, blindly saying, okay, well, who cares? We had a good season and it didn't work out well, but we'll get them next year. Okay, that's fine. But that's not helping the situation. That's just keeping your fingers crossed, and that's what was going on for 108 years, and that's why it took a century for them to win a World Series until somebody...
Well, I was going to say, wasn't that until they actually won the World Series?
Yeah.
There's always next
and
year.
And that's what was so funny, because then, of course, when I saw this story about Theo Epstein, the president of the team, questioning Joe Maddon, of course, I posted that up and said, well, I know a lot of you thought that I was... disloyal, and I was out of my mind, and I'm a hater. I said, but at least I'm in good company,
right?
Because the president of the team feels that way. His boss feels that way,
right?
And then if there were a few kind of, then you could see there wasn't as much reaction,
little backpedaling.
Yeah, you know, there wasn't like, oh yeah, well he's a jerk too. You know, no. Then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute. But I guess I'm just thinking forward now and saying, you know, is there no place in our, and maybe it, to your point, you know, the anonymity of the internet makes it easy for people to just spout their opinions without caring about anything. But I just think, like, wow, we are in such a time here where, you know, there's no, you know, I was just in this play, The Crucible, and I played this judge who is, you know, very taciturn, and he's hanging all these people for being witches, and he believes these allegations, with even though there's no truth to them. And one of my speeches, my monologue, I tell this one guy, is like, look, a person is either with this court or he must be counted against it. There is no road between. And that's how it feels like now. It's like if you don't hate Trump, then you love him. You can't, there is no in between. You can't say, well, let's just see how he does. No, you have to hate him or you're one of the deplorables. There's no road between here. You know, you either love the Cubs but God forbid, if you say one thing bad about them, you are not a Cub fan. You know, and it just seems to me it's like that's not a good place to be as a society when there could be no. I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, you don't love everything about everything, do you?
No, usually no, I don't.
I mean, to me, that's what makes somebody interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't take a view contrarian just to be contrarian.
Right.
That's not the point.
Being thoughtful. That's okay.
Yeah, but I'm just looking around and it's like, wow, if you don't jump on the bandwagon then you're put in another category.
Well, yeah, that's the thing too. It's like, you know, it's hard. I think people are finding it hard to be thoughtful in this, you know, environment where we can really just hide behind a keyboard and just kind of say whatever first pops into our head.
I mean, here, take it this way. You're a parent of two kids, right?
Yeah.
Do you correct your children when they do something wrong so that they don't make the same mistake again?
Of course.
Does that mean you don't love them?
Oh, not at all. That means I love them. I tell them all the time, you know, because now we're at the stage where I get, you're mean. You're mean. And I tell them all the time. I say, I am just trying to raise you to be a decent, productive, kind human being.
Well,
and I say to them, I am doing you a favor because I want you to be successful in life. And I say, and I do, and I mean, I'm falling into every cliche of parents, but I tell them, you will thank me someday.
You may hate me today, but you'll love me 20 years from now.
I mean, but you will thank me someday.
Well, but so exactly. So that's exactly my point.
But it's
point.
Because I love them that I do that. That's why I want them to grow up to be good, decent people.
And that's my point when I say the Cubs are not the perfect team and their manager has made mistakes and maybe we need to start looking at this, or, you know, this is a good album, but or wow, I love this performer, but this is a stinker and here's why. And so hopefully we don't hear this again because this is not their strong, you know, this is not being a hater. This is being, if I didn't care, I wouldn't even put the time to have an opinion.
Right.
If you didn't care about your kids, you know, then you wouldn't even, do what you want to do. I don't care.
Oh my God. Yeah. They'd be staring at iPads.
Yeah. And we see that all
never
the time.
Say, and getting, you know, and pounding treats without ever saying please and thank you.
Right.
And like that would be what would be happening. Yeah.
And so I just think that there, you know, it seems like once again, you know, there is such a in our society, there is at this point, there's, you know, if there's any kind of criticism, and I really, once again, you hate to keep harping on this, but there is a whole generation that was not criticized when they were growing up. They were given self-esteem without earning it. Our self-esteem is great to have, but it can't be handed out. It needs to be earned.
Right.
And we handed it out. Parents, for the last 20, 30 years, handed it out. Oprah told everybody to build your kids' self-esteem. And now there's people with self-esteem for no reason.
Everybody's got way too much self-esteem.
Yeah, because they were spoon-fed it. They never earned it.
Right. Well, that's the key. And then the problem is that everyone becomes entitled, and that's the
problem is that you don't know how to take criticism because you've never. The problem is when you're living in your parents' bubble.
Yeah.
They can control that, and they always give you positive reinforcement on everything you do. But the real world doesn't give two craps about you.
Right.
And they're not going to give you the positive reinforcement unless it's deserving. And then when these people get criticized, they crumble. I mean, look at the way, I mean, I understand that protests and everything are a part of American history. But even now with all the Supreme Court stuff and all these things, the tactics that are being used are almost like tantrums.
Oh, yeah. You know what's so funny?
They're like temper tantrums.
So we went to Austin City Limits Festival last weekend, which, you know, we were talking about is like the, a smaller scale Lollapalooza. And an Uber driver picked us up, you know, because we Uber there so we can go have fun and have a few drinks and not worry about it. And so he picks us up and he says like, oh, yeah. And we were like, oh, is it busy today? And he's like, oh, yeah. And he's like, and there's a little traffic out there. He's like, a bunch of liberals sitting on the bridge protesting. And then I realized he's wearing a Ted Cruz t-shirt.
Oh, yeah, right.
He is now, bear in mind, he has no idea who is in his car.
Exactly.
He was definitely in mixed company, we will say, because some of us in the car are more liberal and some of us more conservative. But it was really funny. So now he's off.
Right.
On his tangent talking about the liberals, and he was talking, and we were, even one of us was like, what are they protesting? And he's like, you know, the Kavanaugh.
Right.
Confirmation. And we're like, oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, we're just trying to have fun. You know, we're not even thinking about stuff like that. And then he also told us that the night before, he was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be talking about this. Last night, I picked a girl up from the airport. And I got, you know how you can rate, well, you might not know this.
Yeah, you can rate. Yeah, I understand.
But you can rate like by stars, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, and I got, and she gave me a really bad rating because I was too political.
Ah!
Yeah.
Right.
But
that's my point is that, you know, you've got, first of all, and that's the other side, you don't know, what's difficult is not only do you not know, you know, who you're talking to like this, but once again, there's either, you know, one side or the other. You can't really have a discussion anymore. If you don't agree, someone will tune you out. And like I said, what I've seen in these protests now, especially by the younger people, you know, hey, they're, you know, the young people were protesting the Vietnam War, and that's part of being youth. You look at the situation, you want things to change for the better. I understand that.
Yeah.
But when I'm seeing the tactics now, to me, this isn't just protesting. This is being done in a very snotty, snarky, temper tantrum, stomping your feet like a little kid. I'm not getting what I want. It's not fair. And I'm going to just scream and yell and pound my feet like a little whiny kid, as opposed to someone who says, hey, I'm protesting this because A, B, C, and D, you know, as opposed to, you know, just screaming and saying shame, 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 and just, you know, disrupting things and pounding and getting in people's faces. And to me, that's a reaction to, I don't know how to react to somebody in a calm way who doesn't agree with me, because I've never had that in my life. Everybody, whatever I've said has always been right.
Right.
And I think we're in a very dangerous situation. I don't know how, you know, they talk about the divisive part of our country right now. How does, okay, we all admit that. How does it come back together again?
Well, that's a very good question.
I don't know.
Honestly, I wonder that myself.
Like, because now, do you think, let's say Donald Trump loses in 2020 and Ruth Bader Ginsburg finally gets to retire because she looks like she wants to just...
Oh, boy. I mean, now she can't go anywhere.
Well, that's my point.
She's going to be working.
Oh, my God. I feel sorry for her. She was sitting at the Kavanaugh swearing in. She looks like she's about 2 feet tall. She's crumbled.
Yeah.
She's so frail. If there was a Democrat in, if Hillary Clinton would have won, she would have retired already.
Probably.
But now she knows she can't. So so let's say that Trump loses and there's a Democrat in, you don't think now that after the Kavanaugh thing, the Republicans are going to pull the same thing on a Democratic, nominee for the Supreme Court? I mean, this is the new par for the course.
Well, I think that even the people on the Judiciary Committee for that. Everyone acknowledges, like, this has all gone too far.
Yeah, but it's not going to... But now I think there's a new normal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess we need... Listen, we don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of years, but I guess regardless of what party, we need a strong leader who can kind of galvanize people.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, it's going to be interesting. I don't see that happening. I see more... I think there's going to be... It's going to get more divisive... Before it gets, before we get a kumbaya moment, I hope so because right now when you look at it, we are stagnant.
Yeah,
nothing good is happening.
Well, as with anything, sometimes things do have to get worse before they get better.
Yeah, I mean it's just a very weird time, and clearly what the lesson that I've learned is, if you're with a Cub fan, you can't say anything bad about them.
Well, you know, I think what you should do is not change a thing.
I'm not changing a thing at
you
all.
You should continue to express your views.
Oh, they are not changing me at all. But I'm just saying is I'm just surprised at their, the immediate jumping to there's not even a moment of considering a different opinion.
Right.
This is immediately. I mean, I put that thing up, and 5 minutes later, oh my God, I can't believe how disloyal you are. You are not a Cub fan. I'm like, did you read what I said? I didn't say they were terrible. I didn't say that I hate the Cubs. I just said, if we're going to win in the future, we better. And I even stated my reasons why I thought he did a bad job. This guy should have been bunted over here. But I mean, so it was a very clearly well thought. It wasn't just some emotional thing. This guy's a terrible manager,
right?
You know, but there was no hearing it.
Well, that's the issue. That's really like the core of the issue here, which is that you are trying to use logic and facts and reasoning,
right?
Yet there is this tendency for people to have very emotional responses, and then they don't really, the facts sort of go out the window. So, you know.
Oh, believe me, when I used to, and that's a great point, when I used to argue with my dad on different subjects, my joke was always, he's never let the facts get in the way of an argument.
All right. Yes.
You know, and that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening
here. Yeah, but at least I'm glad to hear that you are raising your kids with the ability to actually, criticize them or tell them the right way, as opposed to just letting them run wild. Because to your point, your job as a parent is not just to take nice pictures for your Christmas card. Your job as a parent is to nurture, and a like you said earlier, which was exactly correct. Not only a productive, but a member of society that is going to add to it, not to detract from our society.
Yes,
that's a huge responsibility.
I think when people feel entitled, there's potential for very bad things to happen. And so I'm trying to steer them as far away from that, having like a sense of entitlement as I possibly can, because
Yeah, well,
that I think a lot of things flow from there.
Right.
So.
Well, that's good. Although clearly you have a blind spot on Johnny Depp.
Well, I always will. Come on.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to say goodbye, and we thank you once again for joining
thanks.
The conversation. And
yeah, thanks
hopefully,
for having me.
I don't know if we were able to settle anything, but hopefully we brought up a few things that people might think about and maybe even consider opposite views. Wouldn't that be something? So we'll see. But once again, thank you, Emily. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jim.
And that does finish another episode, number 126 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. Hope you'll continue to join us and believe that we are binge-worthy, or at least listenable. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.